Surprise, surprise, they don't like how we do things. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Glad to be with you again today, Barry, as always. Well, another beautiful day here.
Yeah, it is. It's a gorgeous day in the neighborhood. That is, if you don't mind having somebody who doesn't have really any authority over you telling you what you can and can't do. Honestly, Chuck, this is one of those that you just have to sit there and kind of smile and shake your head a little bit if it wasn't so potentially threatening to our security and our way of life in this country. Because you look at it and go, there they go again, making big pronouncements that they can't back up. And who I'm talking about is the United Nations. But this time, we've got a little situation that I think should keep people concerned. And this information comes from Forbes magazine in an op-ed piece that was written on July the 6th by Larry Bell, who is a contributor to Forbes, titled, UN Agreement Should Have All Gun Owners Up in Arms. Now, Chuck, you and I are both strong proponents of our Second Amendment rights, so should we be up in arms about this?
Oh, absolutely. We should be up in arms, perhaps even literally. This thing has been floating around for quite a while. Hillary Clinton has been trying to figure out how to feed it to us without us absolutely going berserk. And honestly, I don't think there's any way that's going to happen. So I think they're starting to lose their fear. Although this is an election year, so if it happens, it won't happen before November. But this treaty will, if it's signed by the president, how could it not be? I mean, think about Barack Obama's gun control record, as this article points out in Forbes magazine. Barack Obama has a history as long as his arm, having to do with being on gun control agencies and being involved with foundations who give grants to gun control agencies. The guy's all about ending private ownership of weapons. He wants all guns in the hands of the government. And in light of what we saw yesterday with the executive order that was issued Friday having to do with the seizure of communications outlets, part of that has to do with just being in complete control and in complete charge by the executive branch of everything.
Right. Chuck, we've talked about this before. We talk about this in our Institute on the Constitution classes that we teach.
That's
about
right.
The Supremacy Clause in Article 6 of the Constitution. And how that treaties made are not superseding the Constitution of the United States, but are subservient to it, as long as they are made in pursuance thereof. In other words, our president can't enter a treaty and our Senate can't ratify a treaty that would eliminate a constitutional protection that is written into our Constitution. And as you and I both know, and I think our listeners know, the Second Amendment is part of the United States Constitution. And that Second Amendment says that the right to keep and bear arms, and I'm just roughly paraphrasing, shall not be infringed by government. And this is a prohibition on the lawmaking power of the Congress. Basically, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It starts the well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of the free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, who is the not being infringed directed toward? Well, originally in the Second Amendment, it was directed toward the Congress. It was directed toward the lawmaking body saying you can't write a law that will keep the people from having the right to keep and bear arms. However, what we have now is, because of treaty issues and treaty agreements, you have the United States looking to sign what's called the Small Arms Treaty. That's what the United Nations is putting forward here, ladies and gentlemen. The Small Arms Treaty, and they're doing this, well, out of the most honorable impulses necessary, Charles, and that is to fight terrorism, insurgency, and international crime syndicates. Does that mean that if we sign this, Eric Holder then can go to jail because of Fast and Furious?
It's interesting you bring up Fast and Furious because you beat me to the punch.
Okay.
This is what Fast and Furious was all about. It was to create a hue and cry for the signing of this treaty. This was supposed to create the public outcry that something had to be done. The whole reason behind this treaty is that the government of the United States and the United Nations want nothing more than to be in charge of which rebellious groups have the weaponry they need to overthrow which governments. all you have to do is read the wording of this agreement. Because there are certain groups, like, for instance, the whole Arab Spring thing, which has turned out to be an Arab nightmare. Don't kid yourself that we were not looking the other way while all kinds of weapons, small arms, grenade launchers, small rockets, those kinds of things were being fed to those insurgents in those countries in order to make it possible for them to fight a war of rebellion against the existing governments. And why was that? Because certain individuals in those governments were labeled bad guys by people within the United States government. And why were they bad guys? Well, if you look at them up closely, they are what would be considered quote-unquote moderate. Were they Muslims? Yes. Were they radical Muslims? No, they weren't. What have they all been replaced with? Well, in every country where the quote-unquote Arab Spring has happened, they've been replaced by Muslim radicals.
Shock. You know, the Muslim, shock there.
Really shock. In Egypt. Hosni Mubarak was not a nice guy, and I would not have wanted to live under his regime. I want to live under who has replaced him much less. You went from the hands of a despot to the hands of a religiously fanatical despot in a faith that does not look anything like Christianity, if you will.
Well, and I would.
One thing we did in Iraq was replace a despot who was actually actively protecting the Christian population of his nation with a government who openly now persecutes them. So I can remember some of our colleagues, Barry, that you and I sat in meetings with,
who said,
what are you expecting to get out of the Iraq war? Well, we were in opposition to it from day one. What are you expecting to get? Well, the right to be able to go in and proselytize the gospel. Didn't happen, did it?
No.
Now those same individuals are decrying what's going on in those countries, and we're like, well, you're getting what you asked for. We predicted this 10 years ago.
That's all good and well, because most of the time, Charles, our colleagues usually don't listen to us until after the fact.
What else is new,
we've
right?
We've kind of gotten used to that. But ladies and gentlemen, what you need to understand about this whole idea with the UN treaty is that what it would do is say that if you don't sign up every firearm you've got and get on a gun registry, then they happen to show up and find a gun. And of course, now with NDAA, they can use drone planes to see if you're out on your property shooting. They can send in the military to come in unannounced on your property and come in and search your residence. And if they find these guns, they can confiscate and destroy them. They can ban you the trade, sale, and private ownership of any weapon that has a magazine. So that means what they call semi-automatics, even though you only pull the trigger once and get one shot out of it at a time. If it has a magazine, it's going to be made contraband. So what this ends up doing, Chuck, is this is a gun grabber's dream treat.
Oh, sure. Look, there's one reason and one reason alone for registry, and that's confiscation. The only reason they need to know where they are is to need to know where they need to go to get them. That's the only reason you would have registration. That's now, of course, we're attempting to register all ammo by, and this would go along with that, forcing manufacturers of ammunition to put serial numbers on ammunition.
So in other words, you will have the number of the bullet.
Oh, that's right. You can get the number of the bullet that kills you. The only people that are exempt from that, of course, are the military, because they want no identification whatsoever on the bullet that kills you so that they can deny liability. Barry, this thing is based on a bogus way of reading the Constitution.
Right. Reading the Supremacy Clause extremely broadly when it comes to treaties, and reading the Second Amendment horribly narrowly, saying that that the Second Amendment, it only applies to the military.
I don't want to brag about this, but you know about this incident. I had a throwdown once with Alan Keyes.
Yes.
And for those of you who don't know, Alan Keyes is, he's sort of a Republican gadfly who...
Former United Nations ambassador under the George Bush administration.
And the throwdown came down
I take that back, the Reagan administration, that's right.
Yeah, he was under the Reagan administration, an under-ambassador. I forget what he was in charge of. And he's a brilliant man, and he makes a great speech. The problem is that he's inconsistent in his thought on this issue, because he and I got into a throwdown on the basis of he was asked about eliminating the United Nations by a friend of mine. And we were at dinner one night, and he came up to us and was basically yelling at us because he had just lost in a debate to Ron Paul when he was running for president in 2008. And this would have been in 2007,
mm-hmm.
late 2007. And he was yelling at us about Ron Paul. And finally, my friend says, okay, what do you think about elimination of the United Nations? And he says, well, well, we have a treaty obligation to the UN. We can't get out of the United Nations. We have a treaty obligation. And that set off a debate about Article 6. He and I went back and forth, and basically he gave the international law interpretation of Article 6, which is that all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land. In other words, he ripped it out of its context. But I came back with the argument that, okay, let's read that clause in its entirety. The Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. In other words, treaties have to be made in pursuance of the Constitution. You cannot abrogate the Constitution by passing a treaty. It can't be done. You've got international lawyers who claim, yes, it can. The language is clear. And they rip that clause out of its context. Anything after the semicolon, they use that. The constitutional attorneys look at it and laugh and say, no, that's not how you read that. You have to read the entire clause. Well, this is where the argument breaks down, and the president is lining up on the side of the, and many presidents have, lined up on the side of the international lawyers who basically say, no, we're going to rip this out of its context and say, we can do anything to the Constitution we want to via treaty law. And that's the attempt here. Those people who are willing to give Hillary Clinton a pass because she's looking like a heroic figure now because she's done this and she's done that. Well, folks, no, the objective is still the same as it always has been. Turn American sovereignty over to the United Nations and form an international government. If that sounds paranoid to you, then you aren't paying attention. That's exactly what this is about. They're attempting to dismantle the Constitution by use of treaty law. And they're doing it by attempting to abuse Article 6 of the Constitution and ignore the rest of the Constitution and claim that, well, we've turned that over to the UN, so it doesn't count anymore. Sorry, it still counts.
Absolutely does. Well, Chuck, what it gets right down to is we have a concern about this because the Obama administration is actually pushing for this treaty to be signed. Hillary Clinton, our Secretary of State, is pushing at the UN to get this draft framework put in place and has made some assurances that she can help get it through Senate confirmation, through the Senate approval. That in itself is problematic.
Well, they're going to have to get, if I remember right, they got to get 67 votes to get this through.
That's right.
Right now, they don't have 67 votes.
I believe you're probably right now. However, they've been working on this for the last 2 years, trying to put things in place on it. It's very possible that given the fact that we are now in an election season, certain fun things can happen with trade-offs and promises of opponents not showing up for various Senate races that could happen to make this go away.
And this is something we've seen the federal government backing off and backing off and backing off on gun control laws, and the states becoming more and more realistic about allowing us to own guns without having to have the permission of everybody from the governor down to some local clerk who has decided. In some cases, the bottlenecks were local clerks who basically said, I don't care what the sheriff says, I'm not issuing a gun permit for you. And that power has been taken out of their hands. But the fact is, Barry, that there are still a number of people, and don't let party labels fool you, there are a number of people in both parties who want to seize your weapons. They don't like the idea that there's private ownership of weapons, despite the fact that that's how we won our freedom from Great Britain. And in this era where we're now, what, just a little over a week past the 236th anniversary of our independence from Great Britain, and we've got an anniversary of the Constitution coming up in September.
That's right.
Fact is, these people somehow think that society has, quote unquote, evolved to the point where we don't need private ownership of guns. Ladies and gentlemen, the Second Amendment is the teeth to the Bill of Rights. If it disappears, we're nothing but a toothless old man attempting to chew a T-bone steak. It's not going to happen. We're going to have somebody cut up our meat into little chunks and just swallow it. And guess who's going to be cutting up our meat and force feeding it to us? It's going to be the federal government and the UN and the United Nations.
Well, that's not a surprise there either. But
no, nope. And look at this, Barry, we're out of time.
We are out of time, but ladies and gentlemen, again, it's another situation where we've got an administration that's bent on destroying our constitutional protections in this country. this time through the use of treaties. We have a remedy for that, and that is to get your United States senator to just say no. I would hope that the idea with Fast and Furious and the issues that it's being bringing up in Congress right now would also be fuel to the fire so that they would recognize and realize that that's what this treaty is all about, and that's what Fast and Furious is all about, was just to set up so that they would be more inclined to pass. Ladies and gentlemen, call your U.S. Senator when you get a chance and say that the United Nations Small Arms Treaty must not be ratified.
And with that, join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.